From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. It has been more than half a century since the civil rights movement of the United States was in its heyday, demanding racial justice for African Americans, with leaders like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. pushing the federal government for full civil rights through powerful mobilizations. No one perhaps captured the visual imagery of the civil rights era more prolifically and beautifully than Ernest C. Withers. Withers captured thousands and actually hundreds of thousands of images of Black Americans, activists, leaders, and cultural figures such as musicians and dancers. Much of his photography is gathered together in a stunning new book called The Revolution in Black and White, Photographs of the Civil Rights Era by Ernest C. Withers. The book is by my guest Richard Kahan in collaboration with Michael Williams and with a foreword by Andrew Young. Richard Kahan is a journalist who writes about photography, art, and history. He worked for the Chicago Sun-Times from 1983 to 1999, primarily serving as the paper's picture editor. He's the author or co-author of more than a dozen books, including Un-American, about the incarceration of Japanese Americans during World War II, River of Blood, a book based on the interviews of formerly enslaved Americans, as well as Aftershock, the Human Toll of War, haunting World War II images by America's soldier photographers. We've had him on our show before to talk about many of these books. He now returns. Welcome back, Richard.
Thank you, Sonali.
We should mention right at the outset that Ernest C. Withers is a controversial figure only because after his death, it was revealed that he was a paid FBI informant. So let's just deal with that right at the outset in our conversation. Sure. And explain to me, first of all, how that happened and whether that has in many ways eclipsed his photographic legacy.
Well, in 1959, the FBI approached Mr. Withers. He was a photographer in Memphis, kind of the man about town, and he had already established quite a reputation as somebody who was a part of the civil rights movement, documenting it, and also a part of a lot of things that were a part of the South, the documentation of rhythm and blues, the documentation of the end of Negro League baseball. And the FBI, we don't know, we have a lot of information about this relationship, which went on for about 20 years. Withers was paid about $20,000, so approximately $1,000 a year, which is not a lot of money, and it's not a small amount of money. He provided the FBI with photographs because he was a photographer, and he provided the FBI with information that was pretty common when figures were coming through Memphis, where there were speeches, things like that. It's not clear if he really provided any very sensitive information. In fact, in 2002, he was asked about it in an interview, and he said he was always approached by the FBI, and he was very careful not to give them sensitive information and be in sensitive spots that he would have to provide information. Since his death, there are people who say that that does eclipse his work. Dick Gregory feels, before Gregory died, thought it was a really serious breach. But most civil rights leaders who knew Ernest Withers understand his importance to the movement, that his photography spread the idea and the visual look of the movement. That's why Andrew Young wrote the introduction to the book. He thinks he was an important part of the movement. And as Andrew Young said, we didn't really have anything that was secret. We conducted our meetings in public. And we didn't, there was nothing that could be put out that would hurt the movement. And he's a big fan of Ernest Withers.
And Andrew Young, as you said, wrote the foreword and was also a prominent civil rights activist. So let's talk about what it was that Ernest Withers captured. You said he was everywhere, not just in the sort of heart of the civil rights activism, but also in the cultural movements in the South, the Black-led cultural movements in the South. He even has photographs of Elvis Presley.
Oh, absolutely. What I think sets Ernest Withers apart is that he lived the photographs that he took. So many great photographers like Gordon Parks would be a correspondent, and they would be flown into situations and scenes in the South and in the Mid-South, and they would then leave. Ernest Withers was a part of it from the very beginning. So after World War II, when Withers was released from the Army, he came back to Memphis and he became the neighborhood photographer for Black communities. He photographed, I think these are the pictures that were most interesting to me of the many different types of pictures he took. But he photographed funerals, he photographed communions, he photographed just life in the South, inside people's homes. And then he started branching out a little bit. He, as you mentioned, he started photographing the birth of the blues, not really the birth, but the birth of the popularity of the blues, and early rhythm and blues performers, early jazz performers. Then he photographed, this is a long list, the end of the Negro League baseball, which ended in about a dozen years after Jackie Robinson broke into the big leagues. Negro League baseball became less and less popular, and he photographed that in the 1950s. And he was really one of the first photographers of the civil rights movement, going back really before, but kind of significantly, to 1955, he photographed the Emmett Till trial, and he produced a remarkable little booklet about the Emmett Till trial with his photographs and other people's words and pictures, because he knew how important it was.
So there are something like 1.8 million photographs as part of the Withers estate. Obviously, your book doesn't have that many. How did you choose those photos, and how did you work with the Withers estate?
Well, we focused on the years of right after World War II, the 1940s, the 1950s, and the book ends at the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King in 1968. So that limited the group. And I think the reason we did is that it's such a dramatic and important story, and there's such an arc showing really, I think the book more than anything is about beauty and resistance. And that's what Withers showed. And he was absolutely in his prime during those years. We were actually approached by the Withers family. Withers' daughter, Rosalind, runs a museum called the Withers Collection Museum in Memphis. It's a really important place if you get down to Memphis. We talk a lot about institutions being transformational, and this really is one. There are about 100 to 150 of Withers' pictures on the walls, and it's a place, as Roz likes to joke, it's the end of Beale Street. So she says that people come into the museum drunk, and they oftentimes leave sober because they've just had a night of drinking and their eyes are open by seeing what Withers saw. And this book really extends the reach of the museum, but more importantly, it extends the extent of Withers' work. The museum is very specific on mostly civil rights and music, and this goes well beyond that.
What was his relationship with Dr. King? What sort of access did he get to those intimate moments when, even though, you know, everything was being done out in the open, these leaders had those discussions, the behind-the-scenes discussions about what to do next, strategy discussions, and, of course, expressed emotions because it was a tumultuous time.
Right. Like all really great photojournalists, they have a way with people. Withers was kind of a Renaissance guy. He knew everybody. He knew a little bit about everything. And people liked having him around. Andrew Young, I don't think it made it into the introduction, but said that he had a great sense of humor and he would really make everybody laugh. He was, when you got to Memphis, Withers was an institution. He was part of the furniture. He was always called Martin Luther King's official photographer, but that's not true. He was just there for Martin Luther King whenever he was there. I had a chance to interview James Meredith, the very important activist of those years, and he said wherever he went, Withers was always there. Part of the reason why Withers had so many almost photographic lives was he was really hungry. He had 8 children. He wanted to support them, and so he took just about every job, whether it was from the Chicago Defender, or if it was by the woman down the street whose daughter was just having a communion, or if it was by a high school and they wanted him to photograph graduation. He was a photographer, and I don't know of any time that he ever said no. And so when civil rights leaders showed up in Memphis, you could count that he would be there.
So the you mentioned that he was there documenting the funeral of Emmett Till, which was a seminal moment in the civil rights movement. This young black child who was horrendously killed, and you know, very much his murder was emblematic of the brutality that blacks faced, particularly in the South. What are the photographs around that that you feature in the book?
Well, the African-American photographers who covered this event, and it was very important to the African-American community, were segregated. They were put in one part of the courtroom, kind of on the edge, and the spectators were kept up into the balcony and by the wall. So this pattern of segregation, you know, continued right into the courtroom, very much so. The photographers were not allowed to take photographs while the trial was going, but Till managed to take a photograph of Emmett Till's great uncle, Mose Wright, when he stood up. And this is one of the most dramatic photographs that I've ever seen, especially in the civil rights movement, and at an important moment. Mose Wright stands up and he points to the two men who he remembers kidnapped, took Emmett Till, his 14-year-old great nephew, out of their house, and he would never be seen before. And Till Withers somehow managed to take the photograph. There seems to be like a sheriff's deputy right in front of him, but obviously the deputy didn't see him, and he took that photograph. The other photographs that he took of the trial are really interesting. They're the two defendants holding their children in their lap. I don't know if it was kind of staged or real, but it's a very, it's filled with humanity and really beautiful. And he took lots of photographs of the African-Americans who were in the audience and the African-Americans who were attending the trial.
There were also so many photographs of people who just are the kind of nameless foot soldiers of the civil rights movement. Absolutely. But of course, they all didn't just have names. They had faces, they had emotions, many of which were captured by Ernest Withers. And then there's just people in their environment. So tell me a little bit about the people whose names we may not know, but who form such a critical part of this movement. Because, of course, a movement is formed of people.
Right. The movement was led by such important leaders like Martin Luther King and Ralph Abernathy, and they certainly are a big part of this book. But we devoted an entire chapter to the African-Americans who walked the streets of Memphis in 1960 and 1961, demanding that they would be able to equally use department stores. It seems almost amazing. But African-Americans were allowed to buy clothes from department stores, but they weren't allowed to return clothes. They weren't allowed to eat in the restaurants of department stores. The hiring, they were shut out of almost all positions in stores. And several hundred African-Americans marched several times, I won't say every day, but several times a week on the streets of Memphis. And we had a chance to track down several of the people who were subjects of the picture, and they tell the stories of their remembrances. Oftentimes, one woman who's on the cover of the book remembers that she was pushed down just moments after Ernest Withers took her picture, and she's still has a scar on the back of her head as a reminder of what it took. Great courage to do this, and great foresight.
The musicians and the sort of cultural figures and the performers in the South are a very significant part of this book as well. And we talked about why Withers photographed them. He was there. He was part of it. Pictures of B.B. King and Elvis Presley. But also, how critically important was that part of the culture at the time to the civil rights movement? The book is entitled The Revolution in Black and White. Why are musicians and dancers and singers part of that revolution?
Well, I'm from Chicago, and I've gotten to Memphis has become kind of my adopted second town. I've grown to really understand the importance of Memphis in a civil rights manner, but also music. You mentioned Elvis Presley, and Elvis Presley was from Memphis because he was really influenced by the black performers during those times, and he's really one of the first to admit that. And you can see this amazing relationship from Withers' pictures, where he's almost on the stage and Lionel Hampton or some other great performer is playing, And you can see how close the crowd is and how much they love the performers and how much these performers are giving back to them. And I think that's an important story. And, you know, we people who are so, we concentrate on big cities, we forget the importance of places like Memphis, and especially Memphis, to the whole world. You know, the world would look very different if it wasn't for what happened in Memphis civil rights-wise and also music-wise.
Tell me about the quality of the photographs. This is something that, you know, people who are into photography, of course, get excited about, but at the risk of getting too deeply into the details, if you can give me a sense of, you know, what sort of camera he used and how he captured these very high resolution images, to use the sort of modern parlance of the day, that look, I mean, although they're in black and white, look so crisp, so clear, like you could, imagine someone taking those today.
Right. Two things that you have to remember. Number one, he used what's called a medium format camera. So this is a camera, for most people who were growing up in the era of 35 millimeter cameras, and that's kind of a small camera, the negatives were 1 inch by 1.5. These medium format cameras, the negatives were 2.25 by 2.25. So there's about 2 or 3 times the amount of information on every single frame. And that's why the pictures look the way they do. And the other thing that I think really distinguishes Withers is he really never used any long lenses. I don't know if he was wealthy enough to afford long lenses or this was his choice, but he always said that his feet were his long lens. And so many times you see pictures of marchers and the photographer is a block away or a half a block away. And, Withers had to stand in the front line. He had to turn around oftentimes and get his photograph as the line was going. And that's why I don't know if people will notice it as they read it, but they'll have an inner sense that he was right there. He was with people that the pictures, as I mentioned, on the stage, he was on the stage. How did people allow Ernest Withers to get on the stage? He was Ernest Withers. It was a very special time when Ernest Withers would show up on stage or at your house or wherever you were.
It's one thing to be the sort of person documenting a movement, but then also being part of that movement puts you in a special place. But what was the role of Ernest Withers, the civil rights activist? Yes, he was a photographer and he helped document it, and that was obviously part of his contribution to the movement. But what do we know about his presence in the movement, his participation in the movement?
He was part of the movement. Interestingly enough, Martin Luther King's last march turned out to be something of a riot in the streets of Memphis, and young people used sticks that were holding up the "I am a man" signs. And Withers was the person that actually rode the sticks back into Memphis for the movement. He was a really active part of the movement. I don't know in today's, journalistic ethics if people would look down at it or look up at it. But I will say it made him part of the scene. And I don't think he ever denied that he was part of the scene. Being African-American was very important to him. He visited dozens of countries in Africa on a trip with his son to connect Africa with Memphis, African businessmen with Memphis. He wore a hat that signified his pride of being an African-American. So this was a very important part of his life, and it became an important part of his story and the photographs that he took.
And I'm wondering if you think that this legacy of his that's captured in this book, Photographing the Civil Rights Era, is something that shares relevance today. We talk about the civil rights movement as something far removed, but it happened just about, 50 to 60 years ago. It's not that long ago. And many of the rights that activists fought for and won are slowly being rolled back today. We've seen attacks on the Voting Rights Act. We've seen the abuses of the Civil Rights Act, the sort of politicians taking advantage of the rights given to African-Americans or intended to provide equality to African-Americans and then using that or twisting that to often abuse it. There are polls showing that Black people still feel deeply discriminated in today's America.
Absolutely. And I think that's the reason why this book is so important. Andrew Young in the introduction said that, you know, whoever thinks that times are hard now should look at these photographs so that you can understand what we've achieved over so many years. And the fact that it has eroded is disturbing, and it's important to see the struggle that it took to get there. When Ernest Withers was photographing in Memphis in the 1950s, African Americans weren't allowed to use the main library, and they had to literally have sit-downs so that they would use the main library. And when they finally, when a federal judge said they could use the main library, it took a year for them to use the toilet facilities in the main library. So this is a long struggle that people need to understand and be reminded of what happened. I think that's part of the beauty of the book.
Do you hope that this book will vindicate Withers, given that the revelations about him being a paid FBI informant after his death have, as we discussed earlier, eclipsed the role that he played?
I wish he was alive. I wish he was alive when these revelations came up. Yeah. I think he said something that was worthwhile. I think it's hard to be too critical of somebody who can't defend themselves. Usually, you know, death breaks the bounds of reputation. That's not to deny that it happened. This was a big surprise to his family, to everybody who knew him. I would have liked to find out why it happened. But I think that people are looking at his work. They've always admired his work, but I think that they see the depth of his photography now like they've never done it. This is a really important gift, and that's why I did the book. I did the book knowing about the FBI connection. And I think that when you judge anybody's life, you have to look at pros and cons. And I think this is a remarkably singular and important group of photographs.
Do you have a favorite photograph in the book?
Oh, gosh. It is a hard question. I think the photograph of Martin Luther King and Ralph Abernathy sitting in the front seat of the Montgomery bus in 1956, 1 year after Rosa Parks was arrested for doing the very same thing, is really a favorite picture of mine.
Well, Richard, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I want to mention, by the way, to our radio audience that we were able to show a lot of the photographs on the TV version of our program. But people can, of course, get a copy of the book themselves and see the photos in all their glory. Thank you so much for joining us today, Richard.
Thank you, Sonali. I appreciate it.
Richard Kahan is a journalist who writes about photography, art, and history. He worked for the Chicago Sun-Times from 1983 to 1999, serving as the paper's picture editor. He's the author or co-author of more than a dozen books, including Un-American, which is about the incarceration of Japanese Americans during World War II, as well as River of Blood, a book based on the interviews of formerly enslaved Americans, and Aftershock, the human toll of war haunting World War II images by America's soldier photographers. We've been talking about his new book, done together with Michael Williams, called The Revolution in Black and White, Photographs of the Civil Rights Era by Ernest C. Withers. It has a foreword by Andrew Young. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.